direct from 4 weeks of rehearsal in Walter's garage, four guys who have prided themselves on becoming the greatest singing group in the world, Walter, Leon, Terry, and Charlie, The Definition.
No, why I love you like I do. No, why I do.
Gianna and the Belmonts.
No, I wouldn't count on it.
Oh, come on. Where's your enthusiasm?
Oh. I told my friends that we would never part. They laughed and said that you would break my heart.
Oh, he really is kind of cute, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
I think that we will part. We will part.
He really loves you, too. You're so lucky. He's always telling Walter how wonderful you are.
He is? Yeah.
Welcome back to Cage Dive, the podcast where we dive headfirst into Nicolas Cage's filmography. I am Brian, and then sitting all the way over in Canada, my good friend Desmond.
Hey.
Hello, good sir.
Hello, hello. We're here.
We are here.
We made it. We made it through the weird, awkward, early Nicolas Cage phase.
Yeah. Now we get to see movies where we go, yep, Nicolas Cage made a bold choice.
Yeah, yeah, we're gonna see a lot of that. Like, just in these, like, next three episodes. We got Peggy Sue Got Married this episode. Next is Raising Arizona, which I think is, you could arguably say, is Nicolas Cage's best movie. Arguably. Then right after that, Moonstruck.
Yeah.
And then there's Never on Tuesday, where he just has, like, a cameo, right? But then after that, we've got Vampire's Kiss, which, while, like, Raising Arizona might be able to claim, like, the best Nick Cage performance or whatever, Vampire's Kiss is, if you don't give it a 5 out of 5 Cage rating, I think we might have to end the podcast. You've never seen it, right?
No, I've seen it.
Oh, okay, you've seen it. Right. Okay, yeah. So, okay, yeah, that movie's just fucking nuts.
He goes full Cage in it.
Yeah, 100%. Sure. It is pure distilled Cage. So we're getting there. And then, of course, Time to Kill, Wild at Heart, Firebirds. We get to do the weird erotic thriller, Zonda Lee, the erotic cuck thriller. Man, Honeymoon in Vegas, the next... we have all this weird fun stuff, and then also, like, the weird guarding tests, It Could Happen to You, sweet comedy phase, and then boom, then we're in the era, because then it's Leaving Las Vegas, The Rock, Con Air, Face Off, City of Angels, Snake Eyes, 8mm, yeah. Bringing Out the Dead, Gone in 60 Seconds, holy shit, yeah, it's... Yeah.
It's definitely the meme section.
The meme section. 100%. 100%. So we are officially, with episode 9 of Cage Dive, I feel that we can definitely say that we are in the shit.
Fuck yeah.
All right. Peggy Sue Got Married, right, man.
Peggy Sue Got Married. This was the first time watching me. I had not seen this one before.
Okay, so. And I think I've said before on this podcast, this may be the first Nicolas Cage movie I ever saw.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah.
All right, should we get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, the high school class of 1960 is having their class reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Peggy Sue's really nervous about going because her and her husband, played by Nicolas Cage, are separated and going to be getting a divorce soon.
That's right.
And they were like high school sweethearts. So she knows if she goes to this reunion, lots of people are going to be asking. And apparently he's not going because she's going. Something like that.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. He does show up just as she's crowned queen of the reunion.
Mm-hmm.
And she has this weird moment where everything sort of closes in on her while she's on stage. She collapses. And when she wakes up, she's on a gurney in the high school gymnasium back in 1960.
Yeah.
All of her friends that we had just seen at the reunion are, quote unquote, young again, which means they're just wearing younger people's clothes.
Right. Although I think this movie does a good job with that. But we'll go into that.
They do a good job of making them look older when they are.
Yeah.
And she realizes, oh, she's back in 1960. She doesn't take it seriously at first, but then realizes, oh, I can completely reshape my life, and starts sort of pushing her own boundaries to kind of see, like, what could have my life have been? Can I, you know, go after the boys that I kind of had a crush on but was in a relationship so I didn't? Mm-hmm. Can I, you know, sort of change things and, you know, learns life lessons along the way?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like story-wise, it's kind of beautiful, you know, in that it's not your typical time travel story.
Mm-hmm.
In that, well, I don't want to spoil it, but it's, you know, almost 40 years old.
I was going to say, I feel like the spoiler warning's probably over.
Because she chooses not to change things.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really, like, incredible way of playing the story. Like, and it's not even like, yes, of course, we've seen the time travel thing where they decided to leave everything the same, but we haven't seen the one where they don't make the bad choice first. You know what I mean? It's always like they make the choice to make something better, but they realize they've fucked something up. So then they have to go back and fix that, right? That is time travel story 101.
Yeah.
This one, she just goes back and decides not, and just sort of decides to relive her life with a little bit more gusto, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a lot more just freewheeling. She, there's a great scene where she shows up to school the next day, her first official sort of day back in school after the blood draw the day before. And she sits down and finds out they have a test. And we see her just doodle all over her test when she hands it in.
Right.
And her teacher's like, "What's this?" And she's like, "Oh, don't die."
Yeah, sorry.
She's like, "I have experience. I know that I will never use algebra." So she basically just tells the teacher off, and then they all just leave. And I'm like, oh, that's lots of fun.
Yeah. She does actually sort of pull that sort of line out a couple of times in the movie. And it's always kind of fun. She's like, it's like, how do you know that? And she's always, oh, from personal experience. It's like, really? What are you talking about? Yeah. It's like, but she's talking about, you know, having, you know, dealing with a long marriage or something like that. It's like, mm-hmm. What? You're 16 or something, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. She's really had a stressful day, just goes and pours herself a drink without really thinking about it. And everybody's just like, what are you doing?
Your dad comes home. Hey, Sue, are you drunk? Really good.
Yeah, so the movie is a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Definitely.
Lots of people, lots of before they were famous people in this.
Yeah.
Jim Carrey's like one of the guys that is Nicolas Cage's friend.
Yeah, I think you can consider this sort of Jim Carrey's second movie after Once Bitten. I think he's had a TV movie and a bunch of TV roles before this, but I think this was his second, like, feature film role.
Yeah.
And he's got, like, a lot of lines. And you can, it's definitely Jim Carrey, you know? Like, it's okay, he's, you know, he's still him. Like, he came out sort of fully formed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you can see it where he's kind of toned down a little bit in the reunion. And when I say toned down, I mean toned down for Jim Carrey.
Right.
He's still a little quirky, but I mean, he's not like crazy. But then, like, Peggy Sue wakes up and the blood draw. Like, he's there.
Yeah.
And he does his usual Jim Carrey stuff. He's like, I don't know, there's some weird side effects. And like, does that thing where he throws his arm over his head and it looks
right.
His shoulder's dislocated or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, stuff, and so you get like lots of like that kind of fun Jim Carrey stuff in this.
Yeah, you kind of get the feeling that there was a moment before that where Jim Carrey got, you know, Francis Ford Coppola's attention and was like, "Look, I can do Jimmy Stewart. I can, you know, like, here's what I can do. I can, you know, pull my shoulders out of joint." And Coppola was like, "That's the one, baby."
It's like, we'll make it work. We'll figure out something.
Yeah. So you know that happened. And so he's not just Nick Cage's pal. He's Nick Cage's fellow band member in their singing group.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have like a little doo-wop group, which is kind of fun.
Yeah. And Nicolas Cage is all about making it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Music's the most important thing to him. He wants to try to become a singer.
Yeah, and then Catherine Hicks, Joan Allen, Lisa Jane Persky, just a fantastic like supporting female cast. Don't forget that Helen Hunt is also in the movie playing Nicolas Cage and Kathleen Turner's daughter. Okay, here's a little bit of fun trivia.
Yeah.
I'm going to go down to the actual trivia to get the numbers exactly right.
So I think it's the same one I read, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, maybe it's not. Oh, maybe I didn't read that in the... Okay, maybe I didn't. Okay, so just from memory, Helen Hunt, who plays... Kathleen Turner's daughter in this movie is she 10 years younger than Kathleen Turner?
Yes.
No, I think she's 9 years younger than Kathleen Turner.
9 years younger, yep.
And a year older than Nicolas Cage, who plays her father in this movie. But definitely they went with, you know, older actress, younger actor, so I think it's probably a lot easier for them to skew old, rather than taking an older actor and trying to skew young. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
for sure. And the oldening up of Nick Cage is really great in this movie.
Yeah, they do a really good job.
For a lot of this movie, he is just sort of like a presence. It's not a big role, right? He has his scenes, but Peggy Sue is the POV character here, and she's trying to spend a lot of time away from her boyfriend / husband, ex-husband / ex-husband. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We found out that they've had a very tumultuous marriage.
Yeah.
And apparently he left her for somebody else, and, you know, it was just a giant mess. Yeah. So with her knowledge, she's like, well, I don't want to end up in that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I should try to push him away so that. She even tells him multiple times, like, I just want you to be happy.
Yeah.
So even though she's kind of like, I don't want to end up in this dead-end marriage, she's still, like, has this weird emotional, I shouldn't call it weird, but she has this emotional thing where she's just like, well, he obviously wasn't happy with me, so maybe I need to find a way to push him into a life that would make him much happier.
Right, right. So instead of, here's my hour early notification for our recording at noon. Nice. That just popped up on my phone. It's 11 o'clock here. I think like this movie, like not just the story, but also the tone and, I was going to say all the performances, but this movie also has Sofia Coppola in it. So, many of the performances.
She's not terrible in this movie. She definitely does not have a whole lot to do with this movie.
But she is a very, very talented director. Very talented director. And I would love to see more of that. I mean, that's what we're seeing. I think she realized that her place in film is behind the camera, and thank God for it, because she's made some kick-ass movies. And she does get a lot of shit. But Godfather 3, woof.
Yeah, I've never seen it, so I've heard it's terrible.
I would urge you to keep that. A world where only Godfather and Godfather 2 exist is a better world. But anyway, so there are some, so we talked about some of the actors, you know, Catherine Hicks and Lisa Jane Persky, Jim Carrey, but we haven't brought up the other men in young Peggy Sue's life. And first, you've got, these are both very recognizable actors, but you might not grab their name right away. First is, Barry Miller, who plays, Richard, the sort of like science nerd, right?
Yeah.
The, yeah, sort of.
Yep.
She wants to talk to him and he's like, well, meet me in the lab, you know? So she comes in and, you know, they have a discussion about time travel and, she feels a lot better. And there was something in my head and I'm like, does she go with Richard in my head? And I think they sort of leave that door open in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. She also has this huge crush on the, like the sensitive poet guy, you know, like the troubled poet. Guy, you know, that was me in high school. Kevin J. O'Connor. Michael, there we go. Yeah.
Michael. I've met Kevin before. He's a super nice guy.
Oh, well. Right on. Yeah. I mean, if you don't know Kevin J. O'Connor's name, he is one of the most recognizable faces in Hollywood, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's in everything, too.
Everything. Lord of Illusions, the Brendan Fraser Mummy. Plays Benny.
Yeah.
Goodbye, Benny.
So this movie is loaded with a great cast, and it's a very unique little piece of, I would probably call this fantasy, I guess, right? It's not science fiction.
No, because there's no, like, science aspect of it.
Yeah.
Because we're even led to believe, or sort of, I guess it's left ambiguous, if she has actually...
Dreamt
the whole thing. Or if, you know, she actually has time traveled. But it's more of like a quantum leap time travel.
Right.
Where she's sort of leapt back into her old body.
Yes, no one's like, oh my God, Peggy Sue, you look old, right?
Yeah. She's not like hiding around a tree and seeing her younger self or something. So it's just sort of everything. Her adult self can now... go back and relive her younger years, knowing everything that's happened to her.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a fun trope. She brings up lots of stuff. Like, her dad brings home a new car. It's an Edsel.
Yeah.
And she just starts laughing because apparently that was like a big piece of shit car
back in the day. Yeah. It's kind of like the Gremlin of its era.
Yeah. And he's just like, why would you? No. Like, why are you making fun of this? And she's also half drunk.
But. Yeah, exactly. She's cut on his scotch. I mean, and it, like, what a great actress to cast in this role. She's not who you would expect, even at this time. She's not who you would expect in this role. She looks incredible in these, you know, I guess it's 1960, right? So I was going to say, I mean, it's 1960, so it looks like the 50s still. So, she looks like so perfect for these like 1950s schoolgirl outfits that she's given, right? And incredibly youthful when the hair is pulled back in the ponytail. Like just...
Mm-hmm.
You can sort of see it. Yes, it's a quantum leap thing, but you can see a physical change. Beyond pulling her hair back. She gets her youth back, right? And also the time where she's at the, I don't even know what that was, but like Nick Cage and his doo-wop guys are performing. And she turns into a little schoolgirl there. Right? She hears his voice
on their knees on the bench.
Yeah, she hears his voice again and she like excitedly pops over and looks and right? It's really sweet and really cool, and I think that Kathleen Turner is just the absolute perfect actress to be cast in this and is the star of this movie, even though we do also have a great Nicolas Cage performance.
Yeah, she's really good in this. I'm trying to remember. I don't think I've seen a lot of her earlier stuff. Like, I guess I've seen Romancing the Stone, which came out a couple years before this. But
that came out before this. Right.
Yeah, 1984.
Jesus. Okay. So I was going to say, that's when I sort of really became... Huh. Did I see Romancing the Stone before Peggy Sue got married? Maybe.
Yeah. and I don't.
But yeah, like serial mom. She had like kind of that resurgence in the 90s, right?
Yeah,
she had a couple.
Yeah, because of course, I mean, I know her from Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but that's just her voice,
right?
Yeah, I haven't really like either rewatched or even just like I don't even know if I've seen like half of these earlier movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I only really know her from like, yeah, Romancing the Stone, which she's a lot more sultry in that one, I guess. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
A little bit of a different role compared to this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean,
I think that's more the role that people would expect, right? Very like forward.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. So the idea to go back to be this sort of like 50s schoolgirl is really interesting to see mm-hmm. her in particular do it. But it's just an interesting thing to see, yeah. Period. But she just pulls it off so well. I love Kathleen Turner in this movie.
Yeah. And I think she does a great job. From what I read, it was supposed to be Deborah Winger. She dropped out or got replaced or something at the last minute.
I could see that too. I mean, I'm glad it was Kathleen Turner, but
yeah, I feel like anybody else, you kind of, if I were to like try to picture someone else in the role, I'm like, yeah, it doesn't work.
But, yeah, yeah,
you know, she very much owns this role after watching it. Like, I couldn't imagine anybody else playing it.
100%. Well, we have to talk about the man himself. What did you think about Nicolas Cage in this movie?
Oh my God. Well, I know the voice was his decision.
Yeah, yeah.
From what I've read.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering about the teeth and the hair because, man, like, I would not be surprised if they're like, yeah, Nicolas Cage just walked in like that one day.
Yeah.
And we're just like, well, I guess that's what we're doing.
Well, yeah, apparently Kathleen Turner didn't like it. And she had to come back and like switch it up, like switch up what she was doing. Right, man. just wild stuff.
Yeah. Cause she didn't want to like apparently tell him cause she didn't feel like it was her place, but she complained to Francis and he was like, he didn't really do anything.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she's like, oh, well,
I think Francis is like, I can't do anything.
Right?
I think at that point, maybe Uncle Frank is like, I think Nikki is Nikki, you know? Yeah, so, yeah, she didn't like it, so she had to sort of change her approach.
Yeah. So, apparently he got the voice from Pokey from the Gumby cartoon.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
it's where you got.
And so,
like, what the hell?
It's funny. He's very like hunky in the high school days, right? He's got this like really bleached blonde kind of surfer guy kind of look to him, and then in like the present day, yikes! he really puts it on. He's got like he puts in fake teeth, right? Big fake teeth. Yeah. Definitely, I think leans a little bit harder into the Pokey voice. And his like hair is just like, well, it's like white, right? It's like bleached white and like, slicked back. It's just such a weird and chaotic look. It's fantastic. Fantastic. So weird.
Yeah, it's very strange, but you're just like, oh, yeah, that's a Nicolas Cage role.
Yeah, 100%. And I think he could do it so easily because it is such a small role, right? It's a big presence in the film. He's a big part. He's a major part of the plot, but he's in these select sequences of the film. And the movie still allows it to be like Kathleen Turner's film. So he can pour in this, you know, as a young guy, half crazy performance, but go full crazy in the older age and have it make sense and still have it be tempered for this film. It still works, mm-hmm. you know. It goes back to my belief that Nick Cage brings whatever he believes the role needs to the role, regardless of the film.
Yeah, agreed.
And sometimes that's a weird choice. And, yeah. And some of it here is a weird choice. So, I don't know.
Sure. I mean, he definitely sticks out. Because I feel like most everybody else is playing it up as like the stereotypical like 50s.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, performance where they're just like, oh, boys are dreamy. And, you know, they're all wearing their poodle skirts and whatever. And the guys are, you know, I mean, they're not going quite like Grease level with it. But, I mean, it's, you know, it's everybody else is pretty much stereotypical. And that doesn't mean it's bad performance. But then you got Nicolas Cage who's doing this whole other thing. And everybody else just has to kind of figure out where they fit like in that.
Yeah, he's on his own level in this movie for sure. And it is like magic when he's on screen. So you can't deny it. You can't deny it.
No. Anytime he shows up, I'm just like, oh, hey, what's going on? Especially because there's one scene where they break up. And so I don't know. She's sort of pushing him away, but then, like, at some point, she's like, let's, you know, sleep together, and he, like, kind of freaks out.
Right.
She's kind of been denying him this whole time that they should wait till they get married, and so he puts his foot down that they're not going to, and then she goes out with the poet guy and sleeps with him instead.
Yeah.
And then Nicolas Cage freaks out, and then you have this creepy scene that I'm just like, what the fuck is happening? He climbs into her bedroom, and it looks like he's going to smother her with a pillow at first.
It definitely has that feel.
And then for some reason, they go into the basement. He's like, let's go talk in the basement. And I'm just like, why are you going to talk in the basement?
Why are you leaving at all? Okay. You climbed into her bedroom window and then say, let's go down two floors. That's not how you sneak into a girl's house, dude.
No. And I don't know what the point was. So he could get mad at her?
I guess. Not wake her parents up? Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's so strange.
That was a good impression of him, by the
way. This is weird, like, weird, like, serial killer, like, Nicolas Cage.
But... yeah, for sure.
Has he ever played a serial killer before? I feel like that's a role he needs to perform.
Okay, so there's that brand new movie out, or coming out. Is it out? Oh, wait, I don't think it's on my spreadsheet. Isn't that the movie where he's like a serial killer and Maika Monroe is the girl he's chasing or something? No, that's not Sympathy for the Devil. Which one is it? No. It's not Retirement Plan. I distinctly saw that plot for something, and I'm not seeing anything that's Sympathy for the Devil. Oh, maybe it's in upcoming.
Oh. Long Legs.
Long Legs. I think that's it.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. It's an Oz Perkins movie.
Yes, right.
Or is he the FBI guy?
No, Maika Monroe is the FBI agent.
Oh, okay.
Killing him before he strikes again. So I think he's the killer in that one.
That
comes out next year.
Wish granted, apparently.
Wish granted.
And Oz Perkins is directing it. And I don't know if you've seen a lot of Oz Perkins movies, but
he's got some crazy movies. And I know, I know his, I know his lineage.
Yes.
Yeah. So the Black Coat's Daughter is awesome.
Black Coat's Daughter is awesome. Yeah.
Black Coat's Daughter is awesome. I did not like, I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House, because he wrote that, right? He didn't direct it, did he?
I don't know. I haven't watched it, so that's one of his I've missed so far. But
that he's directed. Oh, he directed it too. Okay, But yeah, I'm down for it. It sounds great. I love Maika Monroe. Also, yeah. Alicia Witt is in that movie too, and I used to have the hugest crush on her. I guess I still do.
yeah.
So yeah, I am down for that movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds cool.
There's your Nick Cage as a serial killer. I just don't think he's done it before. He's been, you know, deranged, crooked cop or whatever, but I feel like he's always the guy. Mm. Oh, Face Off? I guess he's an assassin.
Maybe, but is he a serial killer?
It's
or
hard
is
to
he
say.
Just,
yeah.
A, just again, like an El Chapo sort of. Yeah, like,
he's like the Joker or something.
Crime lord or something. Well, yeah.
He's just a super villain. He's a Batman villain in Face Off. Yeah. Yeah, weird.
I think you could just say Nicolas Cage is like the Joker and then just leave a blank and fill in whatever movie you want. And they'll fit for most of them.
Yeah, he's definitely an agent of chaos, for sure. For sure. We could still see him as an older Joker.
It's true.
I think he'd be great as like
I don't think anybody
Dark Knight Returns Joker.
Yeah. Would anybody be like, oh no, I don't want to see Nicolas Cage as the Joker.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I don't think so. Anyway, we were talking about Peggy Sue Got Married. We should probably get back to it.
Do you have any favorite moments from the movie?
I mean, I did love Nick Cage singing doo-wop. Kathleen Turner essentially drunk in front of her dad. Two scenes of that. That's right. Right. I just really like the whole... The scene where she wakes up and she's... you know, 17 again or whatever, is really great. Just, I love Kathleen Turner's performance and how she's sort of taking in her surroundings and why do all of her friends look a lot younger all of a sudden? It's just a really sort of great moment of realization. You know, that comes with any movie like this, but yeah, I just thought she was great. And so I really liked that one. I mean, yeah, list goes on and on. I mean, every time Nick Cage gets behind the wheel of a car.
Jesus Christ.
This is world's scariest driver.
No wonder he wasn't gone in 60 seconds.
Yeah, no shit. Yeah, this is the prequel.
I think the movie really worked for me because, I mean, this is the first time watched for me in my mid-40s.
Right.
So it's just an interesting idea to be able, like, think about, like, oh, if you could go back to, I guess for me, it would be the mid-90s.
Right.
How, like, knowing everything you know now, how would life be different? And sort of being able to play off that story and stuff. And that's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, yeah, it is sort of, in that way, it's kind of the ultimate time travel story because it's so relatable. Everyone has wondered, you know, what would my life be like if I did this? And usually there's multiple of those. I don't know. I have anxiety, so I got a lot of them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, trust me. Me and you are in the same boat.
Yeah,
I lay awake at night and said, remember 20 years ago when you told the usher at the movies and he said, enjoy your movie, and you said, you too, and then you felt like an idiot afterwards? Yeah, that's the kind of shit I still think about.
Yeah, yeah, same. Okay, good. Yeah, we are very similar people.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is kind of like our time travel movie, right? We don't need to find some crazy old man with an outdated car. We just need to faint, I guess.
Possibly have a heart attack on stage.
Possibly, yeah. But man, what a great movie. What a great movie. And I would say again, so here we go. This is a movie from 1986 that travels back in time to 1960. And I have to say, it holds up.
Yeah, it holds up really well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I feel like the present day setting doesn't sort of betray when it was made.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could tell it's the 80s,
right?
But it's not like, hey, 80s.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Where
I feel like it had to get later in the 80s for it to get that 80s anyway.
Yeah.
Well, but again, Back to the Future is before this, so never mind.
So you still sort of feel like it could be a little timeless from that point of it, and then you go back to 1960.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah.
So it still works on sort of that level.
It's got to use that like Marvel Comics sliding time scale, right?
Sure. Yeah. Totally.
How long was Captain America stuck in that ice now? That's what they can do. How long was he stuck in that ice?
It was 80 years instead of, 20.
Because, like, if he really came out of it in, like, 1965, it's like, hey, get over it, pal. It's been 60 years. Anyway.
No, the Punisher was in the Gulf War.
That's right. That's right. Here I am criticizing Captain America. You do you, Steve Rogers.
Comic fans know what's up.
Yeah. That's all we do. Well, should we just get to our ratings then?
Let's do it.
So first of all, let me just say, if you haven't seen this movie, I think you definitely should. A lot of performances early in the career from a lot of people that you'll recognize, a career height performance for Kathleen Turner, and see kind of like, I guess maybe patient zero in Crazy Nick Cage. We saw instances of it before, you saw it in Valley Girl, you saw it in like even Best of Times, right? But yeah, I think this is where he really gets on his feet with just being a weird,
fully formed character. Which is great.
Yeah. Do you want to go first with your scores, or should I?
Sure. I'm gonna go 5 on the movie.
Oh wow. Okay.
I really enjoyed this movie, and since it was a first time watch, like, it's one of those that I'm already looking up if I can buy it on Blu-ray to put in my physical media collection, because I have a giant collection of stuff still.
Yeah, well, same here. I don't own this one. I rented this one, but
yeah, it looks like it's not newly available. You can buy used ones, but yeah. So I don't know. The movie I really enjoyed it and was happy that I finally watched it. Kind of crossed that off the list. So had a good time with it.
Yeah, I was delighted with how well it held up. Everything I remembered of it, sometimes you have this, I saw that movie so long ago, it was really, really good, and you can watch it again and be like, okay, well, it's not that good. But, with today's eyes, I watched it again and still thought it was really good. And I thought that it was a worthy sort of companion, I think, to Back to the Future for a different kind of sort of 80s time travel movie. And I think you should give it a shot if you haven't. It's a 4.5 for me.
Totally.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Cageness.
Yeah. Oof.
I think I'm going to go with 4.
That's exactly what
as
I
we've
went
said.
With.
Okay, as we've said, it seems like Vampire's Kiss is going to be the five mark.
Right.
So he's not quite to that level in this. Yeah. But man, you can tell he spent some time deciding what this character was going to be and
100% fully went with it. 100%.
Just embrace.
Look, the only reason I gave it a 4 is because his role is so small. That's it. If this was the Charlie Bodell movie, it probably would have gotten a 5. Right? Is that his name? Charlie Bodell or Budell or something like that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you gave the film working. A 5. Right, right. Okay, there we go. So I'm just going to tally up our scores here. This might
just
be
the whole movie of him
ever.
Working at his dad's appliance store and talking old men into buying classical music records. not saying I wouldn't watch it.
It's actually not that bad. Yeah, I didn't mention there are a couple little fun little moments in that record store. He's actually like, his sort of like off the cuff shouting across the room to, whatever, who they should be checking out or whatever. Yeah. Really, really good. Really good. I actually, for a different thing, I watched A Simple Plan last night. Sam Raimi's movie. And
such a good movie.
Apparently, so Bill Paxton's dad is in that movie. I don't know how well you remember the movie, but he's on the phone in his general store or whatever it is. And this old man comes in complaining that he's been charged too much for his seed or feed or whatever that he's picking up for his farm. And then Bill Paxton's like, that's because there's 5 Mondays in October. He's like, are you trying to tell me that there's 5 weeks in the month of October? And he said, no, but there's 5 Mondays. Go look at the calendar on the wall, you know? that exchange was between Bill Paxton and the actor was his dad. But he didn't know that that his dad was in the movie until he showed up to the set and saw his 8x10 on the wall, because his dad wrote a letter to Sam Raimi saying he was such a big fan of all of his movies that he would love to work with him someday. So Raimi gave him an audition.
Nice.
So fantastic. Anyway, that little aside, so our score for this movie is the highest yet.
Nice.
4.38. Well, actually, hold on. Corrected it. I don't want you to correct. I'll go 3 decimal points. 4.375. Nope. Okay. Sorry. my spreadsheet's not letting me do that. So let's just say 4.38.
Okay.
But that is our highest score by a full mark. That's 3.38 were the scores that we gave Valley Girl and Racing with the Moon. Nice. And I think that tracks. Those are two of the more entertaining movies we've watched. And I think this one's just a little bit better than those. So that's appropriate.
Yeah. Because I feel like not only was Nicolas Cage good in this movie, but then like, even if he wasn't in the movie, I feel like it still was a good movie.
Right. So
that makes a lot of sense.
We've seen the movies where Nick Cage is not the main character, but he's still pulling in a great performance, right? Like Rumblefish, for example, or Racing with the Moon, or, I don't know. I guess he's really good in Cotton Club. I just can't stand that movie. Mm. And he's even almost secondary in Birdie, too. But he really makes his mark. So even when he's not like the main guy, he's making his mark in movies. And this is the real like explosion in that kind of category, right? But we're gonna go from this now to 1987. You know, talk about two great movies in a year. 1987 saw Raising Arizona and Moonstruck. But Raising Arizona is next, and we're getting Mr. Cage back into a lead role here, and I am so excited. Honestly, dude, in the inception of this podcast, it was thoughts like this one that made me want to start the podcast in the first place. And it was, oh shit, I should watch Raising Arizona again. And I'm like, why don't I watch all of Nicolas Cage's movies? That's how my brain works.
Just do everything.
And here I am spending $5 to rent some dumb movie about a guy rowing in the 1800s in Canada.
It seems like your wife's probably like, you could probably just watch Raising Arizona. And you're like, nope, I must start a podcast where we watch all of them.
Oh man, the pathological mind. At least I'm not a killer or something, or even like a hard drug user, right? right? Validate me. Okay, like, good.
It's like I could be on heroin. I'm just buying Nicolas Cage movies instead. Do you make her watch the movies with you?
No, I would never do that. I've invited her. I think she had a work thing come up, but she watched some of Peggy Sue with me. What else did she watch with me? I think she watched Racing with the Moon with me. And Valley Girl, yes. Fast Times at Ridgemont High, yes. So I know to invite her to the good ones. I'll invite her to Raising Arizona. And I want to invite her to watch Vampire's Kiss with me too, just to see her reaction.
Do you want to stay together?
This is true. This is true. I must weigh these. All right, man. Well, that was a great chat about a great movie. Yeah. And, I'm looking forward. Yeah. Like I said, the impetus for this podcast was having a thought like, yeah, Raising Arizona, I should watch that again. And so here we are. Why not?
Yeah, you get your wish fulfilled.
That's right. I get mine fulfilled a lot earlier than you, if we're talking about the serial killer thing.
Right? It's been a long time before we get there.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, check the oxygen in your tanks, everybody. We're getting out of here.
Do you want to?
Oh, sorry.
You want to direct people where to find you and all your stuff?
Yeah,
although if they're listening to this, I assume that.
Yeah, I would hope so. But yeah, I'll mention it. I brought it up last episode just because we should be doing that, right? We're not just having fun here.
Seems like we've been podcasting long enough. We should know better.
Exactly. So yeah, you can find me on the weekly Dread Media horror / cult genre podcast. It's been going for 835 straight weeks. So as of Monday, this coming Monday. So there is that. So go and check that out. And I'm nice. Like at Dread Media on the things. And maybe I'll be on Blue Sky. I have an invitation.
Oh. You can find me, Brian Wolford, on whatever.
Over to Demon. We're so good Dragon. At this. We're so good at this.
Right? Go over to themidnightdrivein.com. The next episode we're recording, talk about tenuous connections.
Uh-huh.
We're watching the Ozploitation horror movie Next of Kin.
Oh.
And then we're also watching the Patrick Swayze movie Next of Kin. Connection, same name.
Same title. That's it. Cool. I remember both of those movies. Yeah, they're nothing alike.
No, absolutely nothing. Name only. That's the only connection.
I like that. I like that.
Well, thanks for coming with us on this ride. And as always, keep your arms and legs inside the cage at all times.
Peace.
First of all, he's not a creep. He's an exceptional person. You'd know that if you took any time.
You're just taking pity on him because he has no friends.
You know, if you weren't so neurotic and insecure, maybe you could shut up for a while and show some compassion.
Are you for real?
I don't know what you just said to her, but I wish I'd said it.
Hi, fellas.